Accession number 27193, Reel 8.
Sergeant Major Conn, Reel 8. You were saying you had some contact with the Dutch resistance, the Mackie.
Oh, yeah, some of them came over, and we had a couple of chaps there attached to the battalion. A lot of the information they gave you wasn't quite, you know, true and things like that. You know, now people took them a little bit of suspicion. But, you know, they took notice of them and sort of, you know, weighed it up as to whether they take action or not. Mm. A lot of the times they used to come up and a lot of the information was wrong. But we had one chap who was attached to C Company. He got in contact with one within from a place called Three Harcourt.
Yes.
And
that's in Norman, isn't it?
That's right.
Yes.
And he got attached to the battalion. And he was a great friend of Barrett Leonard, Captain Barrett Leonard at that time, who could speak French as well, you know. And he was the sort of wore a British uniform,
yeah,
and all the way through. And after the war, he tried to stay with the battalion, and he stayed them right way through up till into Germany. And then we lost him left out. And that's when I left the battalion, actually, a place called Unna in Germany.
But what about the Dutch resistance? Did you see anything of them once you're on?
Yes, but there's also there was the Dutch SAS, and they caused a lot of trouble. Yeah. And because as we crossed the Rhine at a place called Wustervoort, you know, across them on kangaroos.
Yes.
And
when did you do that? Was that during the winter?
Yeah. No, it was. We crossed it on, I'll tell you what it was, on the 12th of April when we crossed, because I remember that was the day after my birthday.
Right. And where was that? Was that near Arnhem?
Yeah, well, it's on this side, you right. know, this side, the Liesel or whatever, the lower Rhine.
Yeah.
And we went across there in these buffaloes or kangaroos, you know what I mean? And then we attacked a factory on the other side. And we cleared that factory. That was C Company. Then we followed the road along down to the bridge, which had been destroyed. Then up into the centre of Arnhem. Went towards the station. There was one of the other companies took the lower road. Because as you got to the top, there was a lower road went along by the Rhine. And this one from the station went up towards the hospital, Queen Elizabeth Hospital. And we went that way. We had a skirmish with some of the snipers and that. We had a tank came up to help us to support us. And then we went into Arnhem. And on the left, going on this road towards the hospital, there was a museum. And in the grounds of the museum, we found a lot of airborne paras buried there, you know, there's all the red caps on top of the rifles and that. And there's a little incident on that one. When we came out of that museum to advance further towards the hospital, there was one of our chaps was pulling a little brass cannon behind him. And it happened, one of them said, "Look what Beba's got, sir." I looked at him. I said, "What do you got there, Beba?" He said, "Oh," he said, "a cannon, a souvenir." I said, "Take that back," I said. And I made him take it back, otherwise he'd have took that. But anyway, we were then diverted from there, and we went to a place called Velpt, pretty little place. That was the other side of Arnhem. We went in there, and got very little resistance, and because there was a lot of prisoners and that.
British prisoners.
Pardon? German prisoners.
German prisoners.
Yeah, took a lot of German prisoners. Yeah. And as we were going through the town, this bloke come running up, and we stopped. He said, "I'm a para, para, I'm a para." And he said, "Anybody here from Tottenham?" I said, that was he been hiding out. The people had been hiding him out all the time. And there was a bit of shelling went on there, and there was an went into a house and there was an old girl there. She had a bit of shrapnel in her head. And I believe she died later on, actually, you know. But we got a, that was the time when we did meet some Dutch people, and they were marvellous. They were really marvellous. Even the way they'd been there, they offered you cups of tea and wine and everything, you know. And they had very little for themselves, you know. But anyway, we weren't there very long, and we went back, and the battalion then split up.
What, you some went back, of them, in, back into Arnhem?
Back into Arnhem. And
what condition was Arnhem in when you were going through it?
It was on fire.
It was on fire.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of, a lot of, what do you call it, going
on
there.
The whole town was on fire?
Well, a lot of it, yeah, where we went, and a lot of buildings had been hit, you know. And I always remember when we made it towards the hospital the second time, and it was at night, and I had the men sort of out in position, and I went round visiting them, and there was a section missing. I said to the corporal there, I said, where are they? Don't know. And I could hear music coming from the hospital. So I went towards the hospital and heard somebody shout, watch out, here comes the sergeant. I said, no good, runner. I said, I know who you are. I said, I know who you are. So anyway, I got them out and I thought, oh, well, he can't do nothing.
What have they been doing?
Pardon?
What have they been
doing? They've been in with the nurses.
Having a party?
Having a bit of a party, yeah. So I got them out and I got out to Captain Willis and I said, right, we'll charge these. He said, well, what am I going to do? I said, well, you can't give them anything, what they call it. You can't give them, you know, deduct pay for them because you haven't got the rank. But I said, leave it to me. So I got them and said, give them 7 days, just like that. Give them 7 days, couldn't give them any more. 7 days. So he said, 7 days, and they came up. He said, what are we going to do? I said, I'll tell you what. You will be on patrol, so-and-so. When you come back, you'll be on guard, and soon you'll be on picket. And I had them on that for 7 days. Solid. My God, that taught them a lesson, I tell you. Anyway, I got... but the point was, they respected you for it, you know. But anyway, that was it. And some of the battalion went down by ferry, a boat, down to... what was the name of it? Repken. Just before we got to Wageningen. Anyway, came off there. Hang on a bit, I might be able to find it in the book. Oh, that's it. That's the same, what you call it again. They went down to Rankham, that's the place. They went down to Rankham, and we went down by road down to Rankham. And then we joined up, and then we made the attack on Wageningen. And old gentleman there had very little resistance there. The Coilers on our right, the Duke of Wellington's on our right, they were going towards Ida. But we went into what they call followed the more or less the bank to the Rhine, you know, on the far left we were, and we're in position there, and we did a couple of patrols. We captured about five blokes who came German who came on patrol, and there was well, it was a factory area, a big pond and that. On our front, directly on our front, about 11 o'clock. And we used to watch this road, the Bund, all the way down, you know, towards the German lines. And it was in there where a German cyclist came flying through the town. A company commander chased after him. And anyway, eventually we caught him. He was on his bike heading back to Germany. And that is when... the balloon went, what they call it, went up. And it was there that Prince Bernhard and the German general came through our lines. And Captain Willis, Wilkins, took his pistol off him. And he blew murdered old Captain Wilkins because he'd lost a couple of blokes that evening, I think. But anyway, he came through the lines, and that was when we took him to the New World Hotel. And that is where the peace, what you call it, was signed there. And of course, when that went up, we had a We had a good old drink with our, you know, our nappy rations and things like that. I dropped a bottle of phlegm and whiskey on the floor, but we managed with the officer's whiskey and that. And then from there we were moved down to a place called Zeist.
Yeah.
Zeist. And then we were billeted on the different people. But the thing was, the Dutch there were starving. They really were. And of course, we're in this house, and I had a bit with a platoon there. And there was a lady, Caroline, Caroline, what is it? Caroline, I still send her Christmas cards, you see. Caroline. Anyway, I can't remember that. I have an address down somewhere. Anyway, her husband, Harry, had been hiding in the loft all the way through the German occupation, and she had kiddies. But the thing was there, when we used to line up and get the food out, you know, and all the kiddies round about were coming around there. And of course, our blokes were getting the food. They were going around the end of the court and giving it to the kids. All the chocolate rations and everything you give to the children. And that was when there was a truce then. We had the wagons were put on through the lines, through the German lines, up to Utrecht to feed the people up there. Mm. You know, and of course the Germans were on the wagon, and we made sure that didn't pilfer, because they were starving as well as them. But anyway,
what you're saying, it sounds as though once you got across the Rhine and you were fighting in areas like Velp
and in Arnhem
and so on, the Germans weren't really trying very hard, but they were.
No, they were. They come to the older type. I think it had enough.
This is the spring of 45, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And of course, you know, there were a lesser taught the troops. The better ones were on the other side of the Greb line, but they had been made to surrender. They had to surrender. But they were first class troops that side, you know. It was a good job they did, actually, because if we'd have gone in there, you know, it would have been a hell of a battle. But when we got to Zeist, and of course, we moved from there to a place called. What is it? God. Amersfoort, that's right. Amersfoort, just south of Utrecht. And that is when we had to disarm all the German troops there.
Was this after the surrender?
This is after the surrender.
Mm. And of course, had you known before that the surrender was about to happen? Did you have any?
We didn't know before, but it's only when we heard when we were in Wageningen that the war was, you know, finishing. And this is when Prince Bernhard and a German general came through, and they came through our lines. Mm. And then that was the first time. They came through twice, actually. And then they were escorted to the New World Hotel, and then the Canadian general came and took the surrender.
General Creera?
That's it. Yeah. Because there's a plaque on the wall there which shows that.
So this was the German forces in the Netherlands who.
That's right,
did it.
And the point was, you know, that the German general, he professed he didn't know anything about the atrocities that had happened. And they had a British correspondent and a German correspondent, and he took them there to the different places, and he came back and he told them what had happened. And you know, that general burst out and cried. He really cried, because he didn't know about that. Mm-hmm. I think there was when they took them to the Nuremberg trials and that, they pleaded for his, what they call, you know, that he was a First World War soldier as well. So he was pretty aged, you know what I mean. But he didn't realise that the atrocities that they were doing had happened.
And did you see signs of atrocities? Did you see signs of atrocities?
Not me, no. No, it was only after that we went back there, you know, to Belsen and places you know what I mean? And we saw it then. Because after we moved back from let's call it, I said there.
You're saying you're at Amersfoort.
Amersfoort, yeah. We moved back, and we moved back to near Arnhem. Mm. This is where the gliders had landed there.
Yeah.
It's a lunatic asylum there.
Wolfhazer,
that's the place.
Can I ask you a bit more about Amersfoort? Because you were saying that there you took the surrender of some German troops.
That's right.
How did you organise that? What actually happened?
Well, I was given a party, a platoon then, and I had to go and pick up these Germans from a school. And there was about 120 of them. And then we had to go in there, and all the weapons, we had to get them out and pile them on the floor. You know, put them there. And then we had to take them back to clear up the school. Mm. And of course it was a hell of a state, you know. Anyway, we've got them to clean the place up. And then the German, what they call it, came up there, NCO or whatever he was, came up and said, we're now completed. So I said, right, took them around, had them inspected, went into the ablutions, and there in the ablutions, somebody had crapped in one of the, what do you call it, rapid holes, you know. So I said, get it cleaned. We haven't got nothing. I said, get it cleaned. I said, get you one of your men to clean it. I said, I don't care how he cleans it. In the finish, he took it out by his hands. I said, you wash your hands, clean that up. And that was it. So, you know, but they didn't like it, but there we are. And the tanks that were held up in Zeiss were in a wood. Mm. And there was a lot of tanks there, you know, and all the tank, what they call it, crew were in black.
Yes.
They're all black uniforms, you know what I mean? And I think they were disappointed in there, you know, because they really thought they hadn't been defeated, you know. Mm. But that was one of them things that had been. But what had happened if we'd have gone in there, we'd have had a hell of a battle, but we'd have still got through them.
You know, did many of them speak English? Were you able to?
Some of the Germans, some of them could speak a bit English, yeah. That's surprising, actually, you know. Mm. But, mostly the officers, yes. The officers could speak English. As a matter of fact, some of them were educated in England, I think. Mm. But, some of them were quite, they could speak English, yeah.
So you were back at Wolfhazer.
Yeah, and that is when they had the victory parade.
Oh.
You know, they went into The Hague and that. Mm. And I didn't go on it, but they took a lot of them. And we were disappointed. People who landed on D-Day and gone through the, you know what I mean, and they took other people there to make up the numbers, I suppose. But anyway, it rained all the time, so I'm glad we didn't do it. Mm. And we came back to, as I said, the Wolfhazer, and then we moved then up to Germany,
which
Osnabrück.
All right.
We went to Osnabrück.
What impression did you get of Germany when you
Pardon?
Crossed? What impression did you get of Germany when you crossed the border? What was your first impression?
Well, it was strange, you know, when we first went over there, and the people, you know, just ignored you and things like that, you know. But it was a strange feeling, actually. We were on the outskirts of Osnabrück, in the station, around about the station area. I don't know if it's in the book as well. I think we had a, what do you call you that? Somewhere when I was taken with my platoon there. Mm. No, that's going through, what do you call it? No. I know I had one somewhere. It possibly have been in the Polar Bear book. I know I sent photographs if I was there, you know, where we went there. Yeah, it wouldn't be in this one.
What did you actually have to do at Osnabrück once you got there? What were the occupations?
Well, it was more or less, we were just sort of standing ready, you know what I mean? And I think we used to do a little patrolling around about the town and that.
On foot?
And looking for any sort of people that were rebelling against us and that, you know, any trouble that was caused. But we're there for a while, and then we moved down to Unna, into the SS barracks at Unna, which in there, which we took over from the Yanks, the Americans had the cross of Central Rhine on the shoulders. Mm. I always remember them. But there was a lot of trouble going on around there at Aduna.
What was causing trouble?
Well, there was the Russian DPs that they held in the barracks. Mm-hmm. And they were breaking out and raping the women and what you call it, and the farms and that, and coming back and killing the beasts and fetching them back into the barracks, you see. But the Yanks couldn't hold them. They couldn't do anything with them. So when we took over, we had patrols going on, and we used to catch them at night time coming in. And then we put on in sections out near the farms to stop them as well. But we used to put a lot of them in the nick, which they had there, like a guard room. And of course, we had the muddy quarters of the, what's called, overlooking the barracks. And the sergeant's mess was there. And then one day we were looking, and all of a sudden we saw a brick come out of the wall. Then another one. Then a head popped out, you know. So anyway, down they went, got into the barracks and just waited. One head popped out, the blood just pulled them out. Then I pulled them out, about six of them, and then put them back in again, you know. Oh, man. But the thing was that the lot of them had got a lot of this fly bomb fuel. And they were making hooch on it. And of course, they were dropping them off like flies. They were killing themselves with this stuff, you know. But anyway, they had a bit of a trouble, and they'd sort of mutinied. And then the old company commander, Major Wilkins, brought the carriers up, brought them up to what they call it. And of course, all these Russians were demonstrating and that. And of course, you had the company there with the rifles and that on each side. And the Russian interpreter told them to disperse, otherwise a fire. And they didn't think it would. But they fired over the heads. But they did not disperse then, because they had the carriers there with a machine gun mounted on them as well, just in case. Mine never shot the bugger. But I think the trouble was started because we had to take a lot of them to the station, put them on the trains, send them back to Germany, or to Russia, whatever. And they didn't want to go. Oh, it was murder, trying to get them on the trains, because they knew. If got back to Russia, they would have been killed. Mm. You know, it was a hell of a decision. But Churchill made that decision, and that was it. We couldn't do anything. We just had to carry out orders. That was it.
Did that cause any difficulty with your soldiers? Were they?
Yeah, a lot of them were upset about it, you know what I mean, because they didn't like the idea of sending people back to the death. Mm. And, of course, you had Polish, what they call it, as well there. But a lot of them helped the British at one time.
Yes.
A lot of the Poles there. And they had what they call like a little Polish brigade. Mm. You know. But,
you were saying earlier on that you were going around Osnabrück on patrol looking for signs of trouble. Did you get any trouble in Osnabrück?
Not really. No. Not we didn't. And because some of the other companies and the headquarter company were stationed in the centre of what they call it, and they had the carriers doing the patrols round about the area.
Mm. What about your company then? Were you further out?
Yeah, we were just out on the outskirts, yeah.
Where were you living when you were in Osnabrück?
Well, where was it? We lived in some village, some houses there, just near the station, yeah. Within them houses, which are empty, actually, you know. But, as I said, hadn't been there very long, and then we moved down to Una, when we moved into the SS barracks. Well, the muddy quarters of the SS barracks where we were, actually.
And what were they like?
Oh, they were lovely. You know, it'd been the quarters there of mostly officers, I think. And some of them were occupied by some Germans, but we had to shift them out and move them down into the town. And it was there when things were quieting down then, and we had a celebration of a cafe straight opposite which we commandeered, and we used it as Charlie's Bar. And it was there that I was posted.
Who was Charlie?
Charlie Company.
So it was a company.
That's Charlie Company, yeah. Yes. So it was Charlie's Bar, we called it.
Yeah.
And it was from there that we got sent to the Lincolns. And Michael Holmes was went there as well. He went to the East Lancs, I believe it was, with our ex-commanding officer, Butler. And he went with him.
Had you expected to be posted away from the...
No, they hadn't, actually. But apparently, what they were doing, what I heard then, that they were reforming the 3rd Div to re-equip them, send them out from America in Virginia, it was said, to re-equip to make the attack on Japan. But while we were down in Belgium, a place called Alsenay, the other bomb dropped.
How did you hear about that?
Well, we got it through the radio and through the commanding officer, actually, which told us at the time what was happening.
What were your first thoughts when you heard that?
Well, we said, well, this is it. This is the end. And then they told us that it had been cancelled. So we said, oh, well, that's it. Lovely. We've got to get home again. But we didn't. We stayed there. And there was nearly a riot in the Lincolns at that time in Alsenay. And some of them had barricaded themselves in the local church. And the commanding officer of mine, Wilson, at that time, very diplomatic, because he didn't want to bring any sort of disgrace on the regiment. So he tried to handle this peacefully. And us as sergeants had to go around, you know, and try to persuade them to pack it in, come out. And then eventually, because they wanted leave to go home, and they couldn't get it. But what he did, he said a lot of them had made friends in a place called Bottrop, up in Germany. And a lot of them had girlfriends and one thing or another there, you know. So he said he would let them go there, I think it was for about 48 hours, to appease them. And put them on the trust, he said that they'd come back. And they did. They came back after that, and that was it. He finished. And then from there, we went down to Calais. Then from Calais, we entrained. We went right away across France to Toulon. And on Toulon, we went on the ships to Egypt.
Was it the idea of going to Egypt that had precipitated this mutiny? Had that started?
No, it was the fact that they couldn't get leave.
They couldn't get leave to England.
That's it, leave to England, yeah. Mm. That was the thing I brought them on. Mm. And but anyway, I think the old CEO handled that very well, you know, and he did.
What was your job when you got to the Lincolns, when you joined them? What did
I was a platoon sergeant.
Platoon sergeant,
yeah.
Which company were you in with them?
A Company.
Right.
So I was in A Company then. Yeah. And of course, I'd come down from Una by truck. Now, Bill Skittle and Vic Tyrrell had preceded me, and they were already there.
Yeah.
And when I came down with the platoon sergeant, the MT sergeant, Parker, he brought us down in a 1500 weight truck, and I put all my kit on there, plus a radio, which I'd confiscated. And I got down to Alsenay and to find out where I had to go, and then I was put the truck in a brewery where they had the guard room and the guards on there. It was a guard room up there. And I put the truck in there, and old Sergeant Parker and I, we went there to find out where the Sergeant Major was, because we had to get billets. And I went in there and I found him in a cafe, and he said, well, more or less, tell you where you can go and pick your own billet. So I went down and I found this place, and I found this billet. And funny enough, old Bill Skittle came with us, because he'd been billeted with Vic Tyrrell. Now, Vic was a non-drinker. He didn't swear, nothing like that, you know. But he was too boring for Bill Skittle. He won the DCM, by the way. So anyway, when he saw the billet that I was, he said, all right, if I move in with you, I said, it's up to you, mate. I said, yeah. So he went back and got his kit, and he moved in with me and stayed with me. And when I went back to get my kit from the, what they call it, somebody pinched it.
A little gone?
Yeah, somebody pinched it.
Do you have any
So
idea?
I got onto the guard command and I said, where has my kit gone? He said, I don't know. I said, you're the guard commander. You're responsible for that. I said, now where is it? He said, I don't know. So I said, I'll give you another opportunity. Where is my kit? And he wouldn't tell me. He said, I don't know. So I put him under close arrest. Put him in the cell and said to the Lance Corporal, you're in charge. Went back and saw that RSM, told him what had happened.